Hello, everybody, and happy holidays, and welcome to this week's edition of Lead Perceptive Podcast. I'm Josh Bicer, lead writer and owner of Game Wisdom, and joining me tonight is my co-host, Game Wisdom's designer and artist for Smugbee Games, Kenneth Ong.
Hello.
And this week has definitely been a crazy one for the game industry. Normally, Kenneth and I have to argue over which one of us gets to talk about the juicy piece of news. But not this week. For my piece, I'm going to be talking about the THQ bankruptcy filing. For those of you who don't know, THQ filed for bankruptcy this week after having about $100 million worth of debt. And that just sounds crazy to me. What about you, Kenneth?
Yeah, I mean, $100 million? I thought they just did that Humble Bundle, and they had a pretty good go with Saints Row and all those other games, right? So, yeah. I mean, what do you think was the major killer?
Well, from what people are reporting, they spent a lot of money. I think they said about $30 million developing, marketing, and creating the U tablet, which was supposed to be like a little tablet thing for the Wii, PS3, and Xbox, which just completely sunk, so they lost a lot of money there.
That was just a bad decision from the get-go. A tablet? They didn't do it. I wonder if they did any research on the Wii U or, you know, like Microsoft Glass and all that stuff like that. It sounds like they should have never been in the hardware market at all, or at least focus on that kind of specialized hardware. I mean, they already struggled to begin with, so.
Yeah, and the fact that they were trying to make a peripheral that wasn't, you know, being formally supported by any of the three big development houses just seemed like a big mistake, because who would be making games for this?
Yeah,
it would just be THQ.
It would be beneficial to them if they knew it was going to be a success, like if that device was going to be extremely successful. Being the only developer for it would make you some mad cash, but let's be realistic here. There's so much hardware that's introduced and fail miserably in the marketplace. I mean, OnLive was a great idea, but it still had to file bankruptcy and failed. You know, there's a lot of other services that come out with just very niche, very, very niche crowds. And, you know, you need to have a certain base before you even go out like that. In THQ, even though they have, like, a pretty good library, they should stay in the software than the hardware. That's not their specialty.
Mm-hmm. It definitely seemed like they were just trying to cash in on the Wii success among social and casual gamers.
How so?
They were trying to create a device that was, you know, a more for casual audiences. Like, you looked at some of the games they made for it, it was, like, very simple titles. And then they had, like, Superhero Squad as one of the games. They had Pictionary. It was never designed to be, you know, something for the hardcore gamer. It was more in line with, you know, something easy and accessible for the casual market. But the problem is, for the Wii controller basically does that already. And Microsoft and Sony have their Move devices.
So who gave them this idea, I wonder? Like, how many hands it has to go through to see it's a bad idea, you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
Did they task for sort of benefit from getting into this market, I wonder?
Yeah. And of course, don't forget about advertising costs. Because I remember this thing was, you know, shown a lot on TV. And TV ads are very expensive, from what I've heard.
It's interesting, too, because they're going for the casuals, right? But they're introducing something that has a very, you know, large boundary to entry. You know, like, point is that they have to buy a device and they have to buy the software. That's a lot of commitment, you know, and commitment is something casuals hate. It's not a very good idea, I would say.
Yeah. So, according to the Kama Sutra news piece, the group Clear Lake Capital Group is funding about $60 million to acquire both THQ and the four development studios of Vigil, Relic, Volition, and THQ Montreal.
Oh, yes.
And at this point, from what we've heard, the plan is to at least get their current next lineup of games out, which includes Coming of Hero 2, Saints Row 4, and the South Park game by Obsidian.
And we can. I think that South Park game will be very successful, so they definitely want to keep that going.
But then after that, we really don't know what's going to happen in the future of THQ at this point.
they might dissolve it, or their IPs might be sold to the highest bidder, or something like that.
Yeah. And that definitely sucks, especially for companies like Relic and Volition, which have done pretty well for themselves. Company of Heroes was a really great strategy game, and Volition really just took the ball and ran with it with the Saints Row franchise.
Yeah, I mean, every iteration gets more and more crazy, but Saints Row 3, to me, was actually my favorite sandbox game, at least in the GTA clone, you know? It was very tongue-in-cheek, the whole game. Like, they knew what kind of game they were making, they knew what kind of crowd they were playing to, and I think they did a good job.
Yeah. And Vigil with Darksiders, I mean, the series was good. I just bought the second one while it was on sale today, so I haven't gotten a chance to play that, but the series, it was good. I wouldn't say, you know, it was like a major seller like Saints Row, but I thought for what they were setting out to do, they did a good enough job. But if you read my piece I put out last week on Gama Sutra, they needed to sell at least another million copies for THQ to even break even on the project.
Yeah, that's really insane. And I always wonder how much money goes into marketing for a lot of these big titles. And if those funds could be diverted better. But then again, if anything's a new IP, new hardware, it does take a huge amount of capital to start, to get awareness.
True. Someone posted on the Gama Sutra about how much it costs for Halo 3, and what someone said, they found that they spent, I think, $30 million just in advertising alone.
Wow. So, wait, did you say Halo 3?
Yeah. The information has been released yet for Halo 4.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, Halo 3, like, but then again, that marketing was pretty good. Like, remember that still figurine, one? It was a very well done advertisement campaign to finish the fight. I think they did a great job. Now, I feel like there's a lot of things that are mishandled with such a vast amount of money, but I think they spent their money pretty wisely on that. And, you know, they had the money to kind of spend, so they're fine. But things at THQ, I mean, they're wrapped up in software. Again, going into the hardware market like that, bad idea.
Yeah. Going back to ads for a second, I think in today's world with the internet, word of mouth, and websites, I think that a lot of like the major money spending on ads just really is wasteful. Considering that, like going back to Halo, I think everyone knew what Halo was at that. You didn't really need to spend, you know, millions of dollars getting the word out about Halo when, you know, anyone who owns an Xbox probably has played or heard of the Halo franchise.
Well, again, you can't just say just because it's a known IP that it'll be completely fine. You still always want to branch out your audience and grow your audience, to branch out to new audiences, you know what I mean? So it's always important to advertise, because you never know what kind of people that you'll bring in, and you know, who they'll tell, etc., etc. It's very, very important to always aim to grow your market, so.
Well, when you hear stories like with THQ, I mean, how many millions of dollars do you think they spend advertising Darksiders and Darksiders 2? And how much did that return on them?
Well, with Darksiders 2, they would probably have to advertise a little less, as they already had an established IP with Darksiders 1. But then again, the critical rating on both of them were like good to average for both of them too. Yeah. So like, and I really hate it, but like the numerical scale for rating games, anything below like an 8 is seen as pathetic or terrible. It's something that we really need to look into changing, but I mean, just how it is. And it was kind of like, how like the so-so okay kind of game. So, yeah.
And we were talking also last week, because we're really good at predicting this, we were talking about the THQ Humble Bundle.
Yeah.
I think they need $60 million.
I just thought it was funny that we're like, man, they do need the money. And now after they go bankrupt, we're like, alright, they really did need the money. They were worse off than many indie companies were.
Yeah, it definitely is a shame. I mean, you look at some of their other IPs, The Darkness 2. I mean, I bought that last month for $5. It was $60, you know, at the beginning of the year. Darksiders 2, same thing, $60. I got it for $10. I mean, when your games are dropping down that much, it's very hard to recoup the value. Well,
think
you
about,
know?
Look at Hitman Absolution. The ratings after that was horrendous. And, you know, it was more of a step back in the franchise. And that has sunk down to $20 on special sale on Amazon.
Yeah. And that's only been out for, what, it's like a month, I think, now?
Yeah. Or maybe a little less than a month.
All right. So, Kenneth, what's going to be your big piece of news this week?
Ah, well, the big piece of news this week is War Z. So, if you guys know, War Z is a game that's kind of riding on, well, it's trying to ride on the success of DayZ, which is a Arma 2 mod. It's about, you know, like zombie survival, like zombie, an apocalypse survival, and you're kind of like in this barren land, and you have to just search, and everything's dangerous, and zombies are extremely dangerous, and the people are just as dangerous.
And yeah, I think it's open PvP, by the way, which, of course, just equals a whole lot of killing right there.
Yeah, and I think we said an anecdote the other week about the game and some of the interesting experiments or experiences that you can get from that mod. Anyway, so with DayZ, what happened was they said they were going to announce a standalone game, right? That it got successful enough to have a standalone DayZ game. However, there was another game called War Z that came out, and a lot of people confused the two together, thinking that because DayZ and War Z are so similar, that they're by the same publishers. At least that was their misdirection they tried to do. And for the most part, it succeeded because it got a lot of sales. So this is what happened. This is the controversy here. So they put their game War Z, which is barely into alpha, on the Steam market to buy for $15. Not only do you have to buy the game, which is... we're pretty much buying into a beta or alpha, like testing, right? But there's also a microtrans within the game itself. So, you know, like a microtrans stands for a microtransaction, which is, you know, spending a few dollars here and there to get items and, you know, aesthetic things like clothing and stuff like that, for your character. Because in this game, just like in the DayZ mod, you know, all the items and things that you scavenge is very scarce, especially ammo and weapons. Anyways, so that's twofold bad. So not only is it an alpha stage, you also have to buy things within it. Or, you know, you have to buy to revive, things like that. It's very silly. And the game is very buggy and very unfinished. And what everyone's up in arms about is they're pretty much completely lying to the public. You know, like, there's a famous graphic online that shows the original, you know, things that they were touting. I believe once it, let's read it down as we go through here. First of all, they didn't mention anything about being alpha or beta, which is really important to do. And just like, I think earlier, Don't Starve, into that game. Clearly it says, you know, pay money here to get into the beta. So, you know, if it's buggy, you already know what you're buying into. Here, they never even mention it. So you're already, you know, throwing the wool over people's eyes right there. The next one is they say it's a huge persistent world, and each area has, you know, between 140 square kilometers, but there's only one map, and it's only 72 square kilometers. So bam, first lie. Next one says, you know, play with friends, hundreds of servers to play on. You can rent and create public private servers. There's no private servers in the game. Okay. No classes, no levels, no caps. Create your own survival campaign, gain experience points, and spend on dozens of skills. But there are no skills in the game right now, right? you can play in two modes. It says normal and hardcore. There is no hardcore mode. you can play up to 100 players per server. Max is 50. and then, you know, dedicated servers, blah, 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 private servers. But again, there's no private server. So there's a lot of things that just said outright lied in their advertisements of it. So that's bad. So
and it got worse too. If anyone's been reading the news about the developer interview on GameSpy, just got real.
Yeah. Oh yeah. What did the term? What term did they found? Foundation build is what they called it. That's their marketing term. Yeah. Oh, it's just a foundation build. And the guy in the interview argued that no game, no online game, is fully finished or ever finished. So why should we release a finished game? I'm like, that's crazy talk. All right.
And it got worse if you looked at the forums on the Steam forum. The admin was basically banning anyone who's saying anything bad about the game.
Yeah.
And there was rumors about them actually threatening people who would say anything bad or ask for a refund. They would basically ban them from, like, blacklisting from making international transactions at one point. That was one of the things.
Yeah, and I heard, too, that not only were they banning everybody, but they didn't ban the good posts, so the left it so it just looked like nice and shiny. But what people did to circumvent that is to write one, they create a thread with one really, really nice sounding post, but then all they hate would be on the replies. So, there you go. So that's an interesting way to get around that little ban hammer.
Oh man, and I think this also pissed off a lot of people, you know, for Steam as well, because as we know, Greenlight just came out a few months ago, and people have, a lot of indie developers and smaller studios have been trying to get their games on the Steam, you know, right, by tooth and nail, you know, getting votes, hoping and pleading. And then War Z just comes on, gets on Steam, even being, you know, ridiculously unfinished, and they still made a good amount of money. But of course, as we know, Valve has announced that they will be offering full refunds for anyone who bought War Z.
They've also taken the game down too. Or not the game down, but they've taken the purchase ability down from Steam. So it's still there on Steam, you just can't buy it.
And this does raise a good point about the issue a few months ago about cloning. When the issue of cloning in social games was how when one social developer makes a game, someone else makes, you know, the exact same game where they may keep everything but maybe change, like, the graphic.
Mm-hmm.
And people are arguing over, you know, what's considered cloning? You know, is that a bad thing or a good thing? And this is one of those cases where we kind of saw it get really ugly. There have been reports from the DayZ creator that this whole issue has left him just, you know, physically and mentally exhausted. And he wasn't sure if he wanted to keep making the game after, you know, dealing with this bullcrap.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and people were pretty supportive saying, hey man, just have a vacation, because he said he would announce that he would have updates to DayZ by the end of the year, you know, the end of this month, and it doesn't look like it's happening. But again, I'd rather have, he seems to be in touch with the community and what people want in his mod. And I think he'll do a good job if he heads the standalone. But this War Z thing, I mean, it's almost Zynga evil. That's how evil it is, in my opinion. You know, the cloning they have done. They've pretty much taken the game, cloned it, put a microtrans in it, and a high purchase cost. And it has like a quarter of the abilities of DayZ. That's the crazy thing.
Mm-hmm. And it was made by the studio, or I think they published or developed that really awful Big Rigs game. That's how you consider like a worst.
Oh, they made Big Rigs Off-Road, or that game?
Or they published it, maybe, I think.
Whatever the case, that was bad. That was like way bad. I don't think these people really understand the concept of game physics either, because in that game, you know, your car has no weight, you can drive into the sky, and in this game, when people walk, sometimes they float, and they can't detect inclines very well. So, yeah. Like this game's very unpolished and very unfinished. And should not be in a state where you have to buy the game thinking it's fully done and get into some sort of alpha test. That's ridiculous. That's straight up lying. If the parent company, what is the parent company's name?
Let's see, the developer was Hammerpoint.
Alright. Okay, so Hammerpoint was a company, but they're owned by another company that starts with an A. I can't forget the name right now.
And while you're looking that up, a few other things has been reported about just how sleazy this development turned out. They supposedly used the same terms of service when you install the game from League of Legends. They basically just copy like the whole thing outright.
Did it say League of Legends in there?
I think so. That's what the rumor is.
That's hilarious. That's hilariously bad.
And this was supposed to be based off the story of this was that they were developing another, like, open world game. I think it was just called The War or something like that. And when they saw that DayZ, the mod, was popular and that it was going to become standalone, they basically took the game and just did, you know, a rush job to add zombies, call it War Z, and, you know, score big that way. And as we see, that really didn't work. And someone else reported, I think they stole assets from The Walking Dead as well.
Oh yeah, they did. Well, it wasn't, okay. Let me say two things about that. First, the company's called, the parent company, it's called Arctos. They made that War Inc. game. War Incorporated. That's actually what, it's actually, War Z is a mod of that engine. Just so you know. But, the thing is with the stealing of art, it wasn't like a complete, like, thievery of it, because thievery would be copying and pasting it, right? But what they did was just like any artist does or any graphic designer does, they use it as a reference. So they reference different stills from Walking Dead, and they use it in their art, which is completely fine and legitimate. They did make enough changes to make it look different enough. But the poses and stuff were almost exactly the same as some still screens. But, you know, like that's something that is very common. So they shouldn't be crucified for that. However, you know, like all these lies and just their cocky, like, lead designer, like that's something they need to be skewered for, in my opinion. Also, their website is pretty bad. you know, after teaching web for this long and looking at this site, man, they have they look very unprofessional. That's a little quirk. Sorry, guys. Sorry, everyone that's listening. It has nothing to do with games. Just terrible design.
So do you think that this is going to be a pretty, I guess, harsh lesson for developers cloning, or do you think that we're still going to have these issues in the next year?
I just think developers will learn not to be dicks. Don't be dicks to your audience or people that actually buy your game, because what's going to happen is you're going to have a harsh backlash, and it's going to just destroy the credibility of your company and your parent company and any games that you've made before and after. So your reputation is probably the most important thing to maintain as any company. But in this one, they pretty much were so arrogant, so dickish, and these interviews someone from the PR team should have went to that guy and said, like, all right, man, don't say any of these things. Say these things, all right? And if anyone asks you these questions, make sure to answer it this way. That's what they should have done. But no, they did not. So he just went, ran his mouth, made it even worse. So now the game is pretty much seen as a scam. And it kind of is, if you think about it, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Now, one thing I was thinking about, as we were talking about earlier, Valve has agreed that anyone who wants it can get a full refund, but then there's the issue about how they allowed this to get on in the first place. Do you think that there's going to be any additional backlash towards Steam and Valve over this?
Well, I don't think there's going to be this. I'm sure there'll be some discussion about it. I don't think Valve is going to get hurt by it that badly, because they already have, you know, a lot of, you know, benefits. They're well liked by the community, okay? And by offering this full refund, it makes, you know, it's kind of like the saying, I'm sorry this happened, all right? And we'll do better next time. But we believe them, because they haven't failed us that badly before, so.
Yeah.
I trust them enough.
Mm-hmm. I think, but it just seems such a shame about Greenlight, that Greenlight was supposed to be sort of a way of avoiding these types of situations, you know, when someone puts up a shy product and gets on Steam.
Right.
And it still happened anyway. And there's still a lot of great games, you know, just pining and pleading for votes to get, you know, the nod from Valve to get on Steam.
Right. And how the hell War Z circumvent all the rules? Why? Why did they get the benefit? I think that they need to, if they can address that question, I think that they could, you know, Valve would be completely fine then, you know? But as long as they don't answer that question, there's going to be controversy to it.
Yeah. Oh, so, pretty big week for the game industry. I think our weeks were probably a lot less busy. What about you, Kenneth?
I wouldn't say a lot less busy. I would say just as busy. You know, because I teach on the side, so I had to take care of finals, and yeah, there were just, you know, three classes, hundreds and hundreds of websites to look over, so it's very, very busy for me. And then obviously I have to catch up with all my work with Smugby, and I have some other games I'm working on, collaborating with some of the programmers, so I have a lot of things to do. And hey, I also made you some sweet art for your encyclopedia and trophy sections.
Yeah, check that out, everybody.
Oh, yeah, and also made those sweet banners for your little cop down. So, there you go.
My week's been pretty crazy as well. I've been busy writing for the site. I've been working on some basically full-length articles on game design that hopefully I'll be able to get up at some point. And, of course, we've both been, you know, just pretty crazy about the good old game sale. And, of course, the big Steam sale started today as well.
Ah, yeah. I noticed some of that seemed a bit interesting. Scribblenauts is on sale. That's one of them.
Mm-hmm. And I know we both bought some games from the good old game bundle sale. That was on Wednesday, I believe.
Yes, I bought the bundle with the indie adventure games, so Deponia and A New Tomorrow, which I'll talk about later, and also has Whispering Word, that's the term. And then there's like two other weird ones in it. But it's the animation and art quality is so awesome, I had to give it a shot. I've been on an adventure little stint recently.
I bought the King's Quest, the Quest bundles, like all the King's Quest, Quest for Glory games.
Right.
Just to, you know, get exposed to that, because when I grew up, I didn't play any adventure games. Oh. And I realized just how horrible I am at old school adventure games playing King's Quest.
The logic is really bad. Like, again, like when I played Walking Dead and then went back to yesterday, and that would be kind of like the same caliber. They still had a lot of bad, like, adventure game logic that I was just like, no. But yeah, I mean, I think, by the way, thanks for introducing me to GOG. I go there every day now looking for deals, you monster.
Oh man, I am of course a horrible speller without, you know, the use of spell check. And as we all know, the old adventure games use a text parcel system.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was just an additional layer of hell for me trying to, you know, figure out what I'm supposed to be doing, because then it doesn't recognize, you know, check, or it doesn't recognize search. So you have to figure out, you know, what word they meant for that terminology.
Exactly. And, you know, we're just so used to so much flexibility with our other games, but, I mean, these were the precursors, so you're going to have to kind of deal with that.
Mm-hmm. Other than that, the game that I've been playing this week is I've been catching up on Etrian Odyssey 3 for the Nintendo DS.
What's it? How pronounce it again?
Etrian Odyssey.
Etrian Odyssey. Okay, I know what that is. Isn't that like that farm sim / RPG game?
Oh, no. Okay. I think you're Harvest Moon or Rune Factory.
The Rune one. That's what I'm thinking of. Sorry.
This is like basically a modernized take on the old school first person computer RPG genre. You basically have a party of five that you build from yourself out of the available classes. And then you go into the dungeon, you can draw your own little maps on the touchscreen. And it's of course ridiculously difficult. If you die, you basically lose everything up before your last save. And I've been trying to get finished, because over the holidays, the gift my family got me was a Nintendo 3DS, which is pretty awesome. I've been able to do too much with it yet, because I didn't get any games with it. But according to Amazon, the next Etrian Odyssey game is going to be coming out in February, which I'm really excited about. I've been playing them since the first one, and I really just love them, because of how flexible you are with designing your parties. The series gets away from that whole, you know, you need a tank, healer, DPS thing from, you know, MMOs. Instead, each class has, you know, different functions. So you have someone who can both heal and do direct damage. Or someone who can summon, like, a pet who takes up a slot in your party.
How does this compare to, say, something like Legend of Grimrock?
It's definitely more modernized. It is turn-based, so that does take it back. But it's not like Grimrock where, you know, your mage is only a mage and that's it for all eternity. And in Etrian, like I said, you do have flexibility. Like, there's at least, I think, three or four classes, I believe, each have healing abilities. So it's not like a game where you must have your priest class, who's the only soul healer of the entire game. So you have that flexibility, and by having that, it basically frees you to design your party however which way that you want, which is just really fun. And for Starting With Number 3, they've also had like this whole side quest where you go out into like the ocean on a ship and you explore for finding more islands and treasure. Mm-hmm. And these unlock special boss battles that you can go after to get even more loot.
So, I don't know. So okay, so about this game specifically, what do you think this game takes away from some of the other greats? What does it improve upon?
I think it takes from the old ones having like a very rigid system. Like, this is a game where status effects are as bad for you as they are for the enemy. Like, you can, you know, poison an enemy and can either kill them or take them close to death if they don't heal in the next round.
Oh, okay.
Bosses are very difficult. There's two types of bosses. There's the, you know, the big, you know, end of the set of levels boss. And then there's these mini bosses called foes who wander around the map. They're basically like the mini bosses of each section of the game. So they catch you, they can do a huge amount of damage to you. The general idea is that you want to be strong enough to fight all the minor enemies on that floor before even attempting the foe on that floor of the game, or it's just going to wipe you out.
Oh, I see.
And it's just like a really good series. And it's gotten hard to find, too. I know that the first one, they were all published by Atlus, which, as we know, I think I talked about in a previous podcast, they're known for only making a limited run for their games. That's part of the way that it keeps costs down, because they know their games aren't going to be, you know, million sellers. But at the same time, if you don't get an Atlus game within, you know, the first month, it's going to get really hard to find fast.
I see. I mean, I know they bring over a lot of different RPGs over, so... Yeah, I've definitely seen that game before, but the way you describe it would make it sound a lot more hardcore than looking at that first now. First look.
Mm-hmm. The map drawing is also really great, and this is just like a godsend, especially when you're used to when you play the older RPGs where there is no in-game map. So your only option is, you know, have like the grid paper next to you and, you know, draw it every few minutes.
Oh, okay.
So having like the little map that you can not only see at all times, but, you know, draw at the moment, just makes it a lot easier. And it becomes a necessity with the later maps of the game. They start throwing in, you know, pits and teleporters and all that crazy stuff.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, definitely check it out. And if you haven't played it yet, and if you're, you know, since there's three, it's hard to know which one to get first. I would probably suggest playing either the second or the third one. The second one is basically a refinement of the first one. It uses the same classes, but they add a little bit more. It's a little easier to play. While the third one uses completely new classes. So it's, you know, a completely new experience for both new and old fans of the genre. Mm-hmm. And the fourth one, I heard, it's going to be like half and half. It's got some new classes and some of the old ones. But, of course, it's going to use, you know, the better graphics and better processing of the 3DS engine to make it, you know, look and play better.
Well, I definitely will try this in probably a lot of the other different RPGs, because I do have a 3DS too. So, but I think I've been using it less and less as, you know, my phone has taken a place over it, because lagging around an extra device it's annoying to me.
Yeah. Alright, and so what have you been up to, Ken, besides your FTL addiction?
Okay, it's not an addiction. Maybe it is. Still haven't beaten it. It's very difficult to beat that freaking last guy. I keep getting to the second stage of the boss and it just floods me full of robots and I hate it. Anyways, so the two games that I've been playing, the first one is just yesterday I played a game called A New Tomorrow, and I got that in the GOG bundle for the Indie Adventure Games. It's made by Datalic, I believe, is what they're called. And it's really well animated, and the art is really good. Just as good as Whispering Word. However, the big flaw in that game is, well, two things. One, the voice acting is pretty bad. I mean, very, very bad. It doesn't match up at all with Deponia. Deponia does a great job with his voice acting, a great cast. Here, it really ranges on what character is speaking. So.
Is it done by the same studio?
Yeah, it is done by the same studio. So is Whispering Word. So it's all done by the same studio. It's just, maybe because they have like 10 versions attached to the game. Like they have a Russian version and, you know, a bunch of other different German version. Just different, a lot of different voice actors. Maybe they were like, alright, well, how about we market to everyone and we won't care about the quality of actor that we choose, you know? Yeah. Maybe Deponia was more focused on, you know, us in, you know, English-speaking Europe. So, who knows. But yeah, so that game is bad in that reason, and bad in another reason is the heavy-handed message. Just by playing an hour of the game, the whole world's been destroyed by global warming.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's 500 years in the future, so what they do instead of, you know, changing the course of the future in terms of like stopping solar radiation from coming in, they decided to go back to the past and reverse it. So they go to some guy who was like, we don't know his history yet, but I guess he was really into nature, and he's retired now, and he's really like, you know, grumpy about it. And you know, she comes from the future. He's like, I'm from the future, and they're playing that I don't believe you game, and I'm like, ah. But that's pretty much what I've played so far of the game itself. But if your message is like making me groan within the first couple of minutes, then you know you have a problem. Like, mm-hmm. Big message like this is much better when it's subtle, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like, because like if your friend just comes in and says, hey man, only your research can save the world. The world's destroyed 500 years from global warming. It's all because of our capitalistic, consumeristic ways. Right? I'm like, oh, so our materialism and capitalistic ways have caused the downfall. I think our consumption, that's what I meant over capitalism. Our consumption, materialistic ways, is what leads us to complete and utter destruction. Right? I'm like, oh, okay, thanks. And, you know, it's funny that, you know, they're all, I feel like maybe this is more of a European international kind of mindset. We'll see. But anyways, that's what I find some issues with the game. But in terms of art and the animation and the still art is top notch, high quality, really good. That's what actually caught my eye. The reason I wanted to try the game was because the art quality was so good.
How's the puzzle design?
Very puzzle. Very, very adventure-like. Very, I broke this engine. Now I need, I have a pipe. Now I have this stretchy rope. Now, it's broken. I need to use a screwdriver. Where's the screwdriver? I don't know where the screwdriver is. Maybe it's in this door. Oh, I don't have a key for this door. I need to go make a key. That kind of thing. And you're like, oh. It's just, it's one of those, like, so general.
Yeah.
Adventure game logic. But again, great look. So before I go on, I noticed this in the podcast earlier. Let's take a quick break because our cast is dying, so I need to restart the Skype call, okay?
Okay.
All right, guys, where we last left off, we were talking about a game called A New Beginning. I previously called it A New Tomorrow. It's actually called A New Beginning, which is an adventure game with some beautiful art and bad adventure logic. So overall, I'm still playing the game. I don't know everything about it. I shouldn't judge it too harshly on the first hour. But again, great art, bad voice acting. Okay, next piece. Another game I started trying was a game called Don't Starve. And I bought the beta, and I gave my copy to a friend. If you buy it right now, you get an extra copy.
Mm-hmm. And you can get the game from either their website, or you can get off of Steam.
Right. And when I played the game, I was like, what am I doing? And then the first thing I did was I collected a bunch of stuff, then saw a spider's nest and started chopping it down. Then spiders came out and killed me.
The end.
the end. That was my first experience with the game. I'm like, oy vey. So, So what I did later was like, you know, eventually after Josh explained to me and I read his post, it's like, all right, well, I'll give it another shot. And I did, and I survived, and then I made a science machine, and then I'm like, what? And then I started putting my weapons in there, and keep crafting weapons and put in there. And then I could research other stuff, and I'm like, huh. So, I don't know, I felt, it's a lot of meandering. It didn't quite, the art aesthetic is really cool. It definitely has its own, Tim Burton-ish kind of style to it. A lot of sketchy lines, you know, kind of darker, grim, Victorian grim characters.
Yeah.
So, that definitely has a sense of atmosphere, and that's cool. But, you know, in terms of a goal,
yeah,
I still don't feel it.
Yeah, it definitely lacks focus for right now. And that's one of the things that developers have been working on, is basically giving you more things to do and trying to remove a bit of the grind that is, you know, getting materials and unlocking more stuff. From what we've been talking about, what's been added so far, they've been adding in basically like super enemies, or I guess like special events happen after X amount of days of survival. Sort of as ways of forcing you to adapt. So it's not like, you know, once you have enough food, you can just, you know, sit around and do nothing. And from what they've been talking about, they're going to be introducing like a winter mechanic. It's going to make, at certain points, winter will appear. It'll get dark for longer. You won't be able to grow food. They're going to try to have some kind of like a story or like a loose collection of things you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a way of making it less of, you know, you're just wandering around, you know, picking stuff up. And of course, the game is still in beta, so this is not a full version game yet. The actual game,
wow,
I believe, is to be released sometime in March.
Well, yeah, and this is important. They say beta right in the front. It's like, beta, yeah, right? Very important, okay, to make that distinction between those two.
And they have been good at adding more stuff. As I said in the actual post, about every 10, 12 days, they've been releasing a new content patch that adds, you know, more enemies, changes some things around. Now, I don't know if they're going to be doing anything for this week coming up, since it's going to be, you know, the Christmas break. And they just released, I think, the patch yesterday that added in their new, I'm not sure if it's called, like, could be considered a boss monster, just like a special enemy, the Spider Queen, as Ken got killed by spiders.
Good God, no. But didn't you have a problem with bees?
Yeah.
That was your killer, right?
Yeah, the first time I tapped a bee's hive and got stung with that.
Yeah, well, it's good. I like the mystery of it, too. There's also, if you go too far to the lake, or you get too close to the lake, or the water areas, tentacles pop out and try to kill you, too.
So. Yeah, that's actually just more like swamp land that they do.
Ah.
But then there's, of course, you know, if you're staying in the dark too long, you start to hear, like, cry out, something starts biting you in the dark.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'm always afraid of the dark. I'm like, God, campfire, campfire, campfire. But yeah, I still have a lot. We'll see how, when they get out of beta, where they're actually at, and see what they actually fix. Right now, I just think they need more focus.
Yeah.
Onto what they should do.
Yeah, just, like, something to, you know, give you, like, a goal or something just to focus on other than just, you know, collecting food and fire material.
Right.
Okay. All right. So our next part of the podcast is we're, of course, going to talk about a post. As you know, last week when we had Robert on, we were going to talk about The Walking Dead. But since he didn't play yet, we didn't really want to spoil it for him. So since both Kenneth and I are fans of it, we're going to talk about it this week. So,
should we spoil it, though?
I think we can, but of course, spoiler warning, everybody.
Good God, guys. If you've not played Walking Dead, please do not listen to the rest of this cast. It's a great game. Go out and buy it now. All the episodes throughout. It's great. But right now, if you're hearing this, spoiler warning, turn off the podcast. Do not listen. It's not our fault if you get spoiled. So just so you know, we're going to gush about everything about Walking Dead, just right now.
And I'll put a timestamp in the podcast description for this, so that way people will know, you know, what time not to skip to and accidentally hear a major spoiler.
Right, right, right.
All right. So, it's not really a, you know, we both basically love The Walking Dead, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it blew me away.
Mm-hmm.
Very emotional game.
Definitely one of like the best writing and I think voice acting of the year. So what did you think about the actual gameplay? Because from the pose, this is where I was sort of lukewarm on the series. It just felt that as the episodes went on, there were less puzzles, less actual things to do in the game other than listen to the exposition.
Well, it's not really exposition. It's more like being part of the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Exposition is when they're like telling me like, well, this is how the disease got started. This is all about this. This is all about that. It's more like they're just talking about their lives. People's connections, people's stories, people's reactions is creating and crafting the story. Mm-hmm. You know? And your own expectations to what actually happens is another great thing too. And they do a lot of cool tricks where, you know, like you're gonna pick a choice to say something and something else overrides it no matter what you say. Because that usually happens in real life too.
Yeah.
You know? When I'm trying to stop you, you're like, nope, Ken, I'm gonna keep going. I'm like, okay, Josh.
Mm-hmm. Who,
but,
who did you save in the first episode, by the way?
I saved the girl, Carly.
I saved the guy, which I don't remember his name.
Oh, good. He's that forgettable, right? I don't know. Steve? Scum Steve. Mm-hmm. One of the company's employees.
Uh-huh. And of course it turns out that whoever you pick, they do get off in episode 3.
Right. And either it's a Telltale's employee, or it's some guy that won a competition. One of those two.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it looks so generic and boring. Sorry, guy who got modeled after. Alright.
So, what was your favorite episode?
2.
Mm-hmm.
Starved.
Well, what did you like about it?
Well, specifically where it took it, you know? Because this is the assumption that everyone had in the episode 1 that in a few weeks, you know, the military will have everything settled out and they'll have, like, you know, the army here to stop everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wrong. It didn't happen, you know? They thought they could stay that motor in for, you know, a couple of days and, you know, people would come in and save them. And in real life, we think in our heads, because we're so prepared militaristically,
mm-hmm.
That, you know, think about this. If there was a zombie outbreak, it wouldn't be that big of a deal, right, to you, in your head, right?
Yeah.
Everyone in this country with guns and, you know, if you're not taken and all these military bases we have underground and stuff like that or just around, there's like no way that a virus like that was spread via bites.
Mm-hmm.
So they had the same mentality and that's logistical, right? But in this scenario, the military failed. Everything failed. Everyone's dead.
Yeah.
So just a few pockets of really nasty survivors. But they took it in a lot darker direction.
Yeah.
Like, first of all, the first choice in the game to make is, do you bring this guy back and do you let him get eaten by zombies? And he's stuck in a bear trap,
yeah.
Right? And there's no latch to release his leg, because in bear traps there's a release.
Mm-hmm.
This one does not have a release, so he cannot escape. So, you know, I made the choice to chop the guy's leg off and bring him back to camp.
Yeah, me too. That was just, if you weren't aware that Teller was going to, you know, use the BM rating for violent acts in this game, that was the point that you saw they were going that far.
Yeah, it was very squeamish, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at least I was very squeamish when I had it to the chops. I felt it. So it was a harsh choice. But that's where they dropped the heavy bomb on everybody, saying, hey,
mm-hmm.
it's not, everyone's infected. If you die in any way, you'll come back.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the big thing, and I believe in the series is the same way, right?
Yeah, and the TV and the comic,
everyone's already infected.
Mm-hmm.
Da-dun.
And we just spoiled that for everyone too.
Yes, don't worry, no spoiler I want to talk about is this, is like the reason I really enjoyed this one was the concept of, you know, well, that farm, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they also brought in the concept of the human danger, the bandits. And that's the big thing about episode 2, was the danger of humans.
Mm-hmm.
You know? The first game was the danger of zombies, now it's the danger of humans.
Yeah.
Specifically, there's these farmers that hide an insidious secret. I wonder if everyone can guess. Let's just say they have a lot of meat, but they live on a dairy farm.
Yep.
Okay. So that is a very dark turn that I didn't expect. And then don't forget the history with the bandits. And, you know, there's that one lady who was crazy. Mm-hmm. And she obviously worked at, like, the Walmart equivalent or whatever. And, she was raving like a lunatic, talking about how her daughter was taken away. And to give her back and stuff like that. I'm like, what? You could tell there's just like a lot of history there, but you can make assumptions. That's the greatest part, is when your mind makes up the story for you. Mm-hmm. You know, you can kind of see where she's coming from, where she's possibly could have been. And then you can also see the dark nature of the friendly farmers that brought you in, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they shot, yeah. So.
My favorite episode, gameplay-wise, was episode 3. Because I felt that one had some really just great moments. Like when you have to decide whether to kill, I think the kid's name was Duck, or let his father do it. That was just like such an emotional scene right there.
What did you choose?
I chose to kill to spare the father from having to kill his own son.
I did the same.
And then the wife kills herself.
No matter what you do, that's the killer of it.
Mm-hmm. I thought it had good, the puzzles were, they were good, they weren't, you know, crazy adventure game logic.
That's actually what I like about Walking Dead, because they don't use crazy adventure game logic, they just use logic.
Yeah.
You know, you just do it, because you have to do it, not because you have to figure out how to do it.
Yeah. Like getting the train to start, and then, you know, clearing the track.
Yeah, and I just like the introduction of the new characters. What I really liked about that series is Clementine growing.
Yeah.
Right? She's like, you tell her that you guys are like partners, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you guys are in that little shed area where it's dark.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you have to push her over and she's like separated by that. I don't know, was it grate or whatever? I don't know. They're separated by some sort of, locked area. And, you know, zombies are coming after her. She's forced to actually use that gun that she was trained with earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And, or at least try to. She actually never takes a shot. But you can see how scared she was.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, lucky that, he was so quick-witted instead of freaking out, you know?
Mm-hmm. What did you think about episode 4? Because this is the one that I heard like a lot of people generally complain about, like the weakest of 5 episodes.
Well, yeah, I would say it's the weakest because, well, I don't say it's the weakest, but there was a lot more ridiculous things that happened in that one, mm-hmm. right? Even though the whole thing was supposed to be, you know, ridiculous, and not ridiculous, but you know, there's a lot of the fantasy element of this disease or whatever taking over everybody. But there was this girl that was in it that could like climb on walls and ceilings. She could jump everywhere.
Assassin's Creed lady.
Yeah, and the crazy thing with that lady is that, at least in my mind, physics wise, is there's one point where Lee had to jump off a building to another building, and she's really small, right? And all she has is her hand to grab onto. So he jumps, grabs her hand. And she somehow pulls him up. No way. Logistically, what would happen is he would jump, he would grab her hand, she would fall down, they both die. Okay? That's what would happen. Another scenario. A zombie pops out of his shed. Somehow a TV falls on his head. Okay, how? Where? What? How? What? TV? Where'd it come from? So, I mean.
My big disappointment was they were setting up like the whole compound, I forget the name of it, where
uh-huh.
the crazy things were.
It's the equivalent to Woodbury.
Yeah.
Right. And they talked about it being like, you know, an area just for the perfects, the people that have no diseases, no issues, no genital issue problems. You know.
Yeah, it's supposed to be, you know, this whole big, you know, stealth mission. We're going, you know, we have a big firefight, all crazy stuff. And then we get there, and it's just, you know, oh, someone got bit and it spread. Which doesn't really make sense, because if they were all, you know, holed up and, you know, ready to kill anyone who, you know, even, you know, cut their finger. They never really explained how the whole place fell apart.
Well, they kind of did. That one lady killed that one guy, remember? And that's how the first zombie was created, but she might have been crazy and killed other people too. Yeah. She could have gone on a killing spree.
Yeah, but it still seems like a bit of a lazy writing, I think, for that, you know, another ninja lady just went and just wiped everyone out.
A ninja lady? What are we talking about?
You know, like, she became, like, a one-man army and just wiped around, just like the other one, with, like, the grappling hook. Like, you know, she was...
Oh, you're talking about the lady I just talked about?
Yeah.
I don't think she killed everybody, but I think she killed enough people to make zombies be a menace. And, listen, when people are unaware of what's happening, mm-hmm. and it's going through so fast, you know, mm-hmm. like, you have one, now you have two, now you have three, now you have a horde of, like, four of them just coming at you. It's coming in corners and it's spreading like crazy, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's possible. So in this scenario, the most possible thing happened. But again, you're right. You're right. For a community that's so self-aware and so willing to cut off the disease bits of itself, mm-hmm. you know, that's pretty far-fetched, I would say. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I think they would have caught that pretty early. And they would also be very well-armed.
Yeah. They were like, I don't think they even like found any like weapons like in that whole episode.
Nah. They opened up the weapon area and then it came like to the tower to the top.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, it's still good. It's a good episode. It just has a lot more ridiculous things within it. Well, things that stuff did require a very big suspense of disbelief.
Yeah, which is a bit different from the previous three episodes. They did a good job of grounding it in somewhat of a realistic situation.
They brought in a new writer to help co-write with that one, actually. So, yeah. So that's probably part of his input, you know? Which kind of sucks. But, I don't know. The first one was a little weaker. I think the first one to me was the weaker one of the...
The first one actually had, I think, my favorite puzzle. It was the part where you had to figure out how to clear out the hotel of zombies without being detected. I thought that was just a pretty...
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember that one clearly. I don't know if the third... you were great. But I think the fifth one, though, is probably my second favorite after Starved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fifth one. I think what was good about it was this was the one where most of your choices had the strongest impact.
No Time Left, right, that's what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I completely agree. The choices were fast and they were very impactful. I mean, they had a lot of ramifications to each one. The very first choice you have is pretty wild, I would say. It's as bad as the leg cutting scene.
Yeah. When you did episode 5, did you have the entire group with you or did you lose anyone when you started that episode?
Everyone came along with me but Kenny.
Oh.
Even though Kenny and I gave Kenny so much help.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe he was to turn my back at the last minute like that. But come on, Kenny. Come on. I helped you out so much.
I did get the whole group, which is weird because I, you know, argued with him. I think I punched him a few times and he still came with me at the end.
What? I helped that guy out so much and he still backstabbed me in the end. Maybe I should have, like, I don't know.
What did you think of, I guess, the main antagonist of that? The guy who just came out of nowhere who's been following Lee and Clementine since, I think, end of episode 2?
I actually liked him. He seemed a little, like, out of nowhere, but, you know, in real life there aren't really any supervillains, just people with an axe to grind, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know? You don't have some sort of crazy antagonist. But he does antagonize you in a way. You already have enough danger just living, right?
Mm-hmm.
In dangers from other humans, but this one's a little more sadistic because he's just watching you.
I still thought that was a little another area of weak writing that this one guy, you know, not only did he stalk Lee and Clementine, but he did, you know, like getting around the zombies. You know, he seemed to be zombie-proof.
Yeah. He was by himself. He was a little crazy. Mm-hmm. And he had that zombie head, too.
Yeah.
So...
He kind of
spoiler.
When he had a box, you know, someone's in that box.
I just thought it was a bag. And then I thought he was just talking to himself, and I did not see the zombie head. But you really grow to love Clementine. You really want, you're so protective. You're just like, I don't care. Everything's falling to crap, and I don't even care. I just want Clementine to be safe.
Yeah.
I just want to get her somewhere safe, and that's the most important thing to me.
Mm-hmm. So about the big choice, did you... tell Clementine to kill Lee, or did you tell her to go away?
I told her to kill me.
Yeah, me too.
That was a really emotionally impactful scene.
Yeah.
The animation's so good in that game. I know it's stylized, whatever, but I mean, it doesn't have to be realistic looking to leave an emotional impact. And it did. That's for sure. And I was actually watching a lot of Let's Play videos and just waiting for the end and clipping to the end to watch everyone's reaction. And a couple of them actually outright cried or like couldn't look at the screen. And I'm like, yeah, that's right. Cause you can tell if those people are crying that, you know, they struck an emotional chord.
Yeah. This, I think the one we did was like one of the first video games, both episodic and just regular, that really developed a good core, cast of characters like that.
Well, one of the best young characters ever made was Clementine. She's smart. Mm-hmm. She was a smart kid. And she knew her situation each time. And the way she would react, you know, was so, you know, was and honest. Her, yeah.
Voice actress just nailed it, I think.
For sure, definitely. Like example, like, in the writing too is really good. Like, when Lee told, like, I took me this choice here, but when Lee told Clementine, I'll miss you. Mm-hmm. And she responds, me too. Right? That's like a very kid-like thing to say. Like, what else do you say?
Yeah.
You know? So her reaction was like, me too. So, I thought that was pretty good writing. Mm-hmm. Do the research well.
So, what do you think about what they're going to do with the next season? Do you think they're going to keep Clementine, or do you think that the story has sort of run its course?
I would like them to do Clementine, but I'm pretty sure that they'll probably do another entirely different arc. But then again, Lee was just a good character, and if they do a Left 4 Dead 2 thing with it, I'll be so pissed. I'm like, all right, we're gonna put Rochelle, and then we're making 3 clones of Rochelle, and that's gonna be the whole series. I'm like, no, I don't want to play Rochelle Walking Dead. But I would like, I mean, if they did Clementine or made an older version of Clementine, that'd be excellent.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you were right. Lee was also a really good main character.
Definitely.
You had control over, you know, his reactions, but it wasn't like you were, you know, changing his whole personality. Choices.
No, because he kind of thought like we did in a way, you know, at least logically. He wasn't quick to anger. He was a pretty rational, pragmatic guy, you know.
And he cared for Clementine, of course.
Of course he did. There were times when you could see him angry, but most of the time I tried to stay level-headed.
Mm-hmm. And I think we can both safely say that I think this is Telltale's strongest offering.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Back to the Future was pretty good, but this is way better. This is like another League of Gaming, right? It actually won in the VGA. That's the crazy thing to me. I'm like, how did this game win?
Yeah, it's shown Spike, no less.
Yeah, it's Spike. Because, I mean, I thought COD would win every single category, even sports games. But, well, actually, no, that would be Madden. Then Madden and Black Ops taking everything. But, I mean, a lot of people were complaining, saying, you know, Walking Dead is just an interactive storyteller. I'm like, no, play the game and you'll really have that realization, because you're saying it without any sort of, you know, trial to it. You test it out first before you make those kind of claims.
Oh.
Because you could call COD a, you know, you could call COD a cutscene simulator, right? Or any sort of Final Fantasy games, a cutscene simulator for sure.
So one area that I talked about in the post, that the one area I think a lot of people, this is where, you know, people are split about with The Walking Dead, was with the whole, you know, how choices developed. Because as we play the game, the choices never really factored into the gameplay. It was more about how the story played around in the background. Mm-hmm. Do you think that a lot of people were disappointed in the fact that the game, basically, it played the same way regardless of your choices?
I think to have a strong narrative, that you need a certain level of control, because when you make things like open world and stuff, you know, you can't account for all the players' actions, right? But if you have, you know, certain scenarios, you can kind of pinpoint where, you know, they're going to make certain choices, logically, at, you know, as a pragmatic type of view. So I think they actually did a pretty good job. They did, because they did allow you amount of control, but again, Lee did retain his character as a person. So.
Yeah. Alright. Do you have anything else to add for The Walking Dead?
I'm really excited for the second season. I think a lot of people are, and I think Telltale should give themselves a pat on the back for creating an excellent series, showing that episodic gaming can work, and, you know, picking and knowing that voice acting is really important, you know?
True.
Unlike this New Tomorrow game, which has great art and terrible voice acting.
Alright. How long have we been running total, Kenneth?
Well, at 26 minutes plus however long the other one was, so.
Alright, I guess it's time to wrap things up.
Yeah, it is.
Alright, everyone. With that said about The Walking Dead, I think we're going to call it for this week. So, hopefully, we'll all still be alive next week. Then the world's supposed to be happening as we're recording this.
Well, it's past 2 o'clock now, so it technically is the 21st, so we should... Either we're dead or we're fine.
Or we'll all wake up tomorrow and zombie apocalypse for real.
Well, if that's the case, I think it'd be hilarious if they did have the zombie apocalypse. I was just taking care of cleaning like we thought we just talked about earlier.
Alright. So, that will do it for us. Once again, I'm Josh Pfizer.
And I'm Ken Ohm.
And see everyone next week, if we're still alive. And if we are, have a happy holidays.
Yep, and Merry Christmas.
Yep.
Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. It goes on.
And as always, if you are interested in writing for us or appearing on the podcast, you can send us an email.
Yep. You can see there's a little submission button on the right or a contact button on the bottom. So please, by all means, send us a message.
All right, everyone, have a good week, and we'll see you later.
See ya.
Bye-bye.